Hello and welcome to Press TV's News Analysis, coming to you from Tehran. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, in the region where schemes and plots are often used to create division and chaos, on Friday, Lebanon was the scene of a deadly car bomb where 8 people were killed and many others injured. Our top Lebanese intelligence officer, Wissam Al-Hassan, was among the victims of the blast, which took place shortly after his return from France. Well, as fingers are being pointed at various entities, the question we will explore on this news analysis is, who could be behind the assassination of a senior intelligence official, and who could benefit if Lebanon is gripped by turmoil and sectarian violence?
Lebanon is once again gripped by a political turmoil as finger-pointing and name-calling are traded among various political factions. Armed groups are back on the streets, and the country's army is trying to keep the situation calm. The latest chapter in Lebanon's history began on Friday when an explosion ripped through Beirut's neighborhood of Ashrafia, targeting the head of Lebanon's internal security forces, Wissam Al-Hassan. Hassan was close to the pro-Western March 14th, and the alliance is now blaming Damascus for his death. The killing is a reminder of an event 7 years ago.
Well, I think it's very reminiscent to the Hariri assassination, which took place back in February 2005, which was the introduction to a bigger series of assassinations.
Hariri's assassination plunged the country into chaos and fueled anti-Syrian sentiment, as the result of which Syria was forced to remove its troops out of Lebanon. 3 years later, an investigation into the killing conducted by a U.S.-backed tribunal cleared Syria of all charges, and resistance group Hezbollah even presented some evidence that implicated Israel's involvement in Hariri's killing. The evidence, however, was shunned by the tribunal. Now, 7 years on, the scenario to cause sectarian strife or even a civil war seems to be repeating itself, and this time Wissam Al-Hassan is the victim. But what made him a prime target?
That Wissam Al-Hassan has very cordial relations with different intelligence agencies, including the CIA, MI6, and Mossad.
He knows too much. He was very close to very sensitive files. Also, the assassination of Rafiq al-Hariri.
He's also cooperated in arresting Israeli spies. You also have a cooperation between Wissam al-Hassan and some Western countries in arresting al-Qaeda and extremists.
Friday's assassination coincides with a visit by the UN Arab League Special Envoy Lakhdar Ebrahimi to Syria to push for a temporary ceasefire. Some believe there is connection between the two events.
What is happening in the region is all linked together. And the strange thing is that on the day Lakhdar Brahimi suggests a ceasefire in Syria, the next day we see in Lebanon another kind of fire erupting. And that is something to think about.
With a possible truce on the horizon in Syria, and given the fact that the plans for a speedy fall of the Syrian President Bashar al-Assad failing to yield the intended results that the U.S. and its allies are pursuing, insecurity in Lebanon seems to be the next phase in a broader plan. Many observers say the target of Friday's blast in Lebanon was the country's security and stability. But a lingering question is, who will benefit if Lebanon plunges into chaos again?
I'd like to welcome my guest to the program from Beirut, Hezbollah media spokesman, Mr. Abraham Mousavi. From the Executive Intelligence Review, Mr. Lawrence Freeman, Baltimore. And Senior Associate, hello, Oxford University, Sharman Nawani, joining us via Skype in Beirut. Thank you all for being with us. But I'd like to start this off with Mr. Mousavi in Beirut. Do you think that those behind the attacks in general want to start a sectarian war or a war between the religions? Because we know this incident took place in the Christian part of Lebanon. And also, Mr. Al-Hassan was an ally of the March 14th coalition.
Well, let me first clarify that I'm here in my capacity as a political analyst, not as the head of media relations office in Hezbollah.
Okay.
But at this moment, we have to be a kind of responsible people. We don't want to go into any kind of reaction that is involved with sentiments and emotional things that we would regret later. This is something that should be applied to all Lebanese, to all those who are responsible at this point. Let me just say about the head of the Internal Security Forces. The head of the Internal Security Forces, Mr. Ashraf Rifi, he is the boss of Mr. Wissam al-Hassan. When he was asked about the possibilities, he has put kind of four possibilities about who could be behind this assassination. And he said that when we have the Israeli intelligence, because the Israelis have suffered a lot from his work, from the work of Mr. Martyr Wissam al-Hassan, dismantling many espionage cells and many spy networks in Lebanon. He talked about maybe Al-Qaeda or some extremists whom he also was able successfully to capture many of them. They talked about Syria as well, that it could be a part. And then they said there is a possibility of some fifth column trying to bring the country, to drag it into a kind of general chaos, into a kind of general turbulence that would serve the whole situation in the region. My special understanding, my analysis is that, yes, there is a lot of people who are interested. There are a lot of sites who are interested in bringing the situation in Lebanon into a complete state of chaos where they could benefit in using Lebanon as a platform to launch more and more attacks against Syria at one side, and that it could be used as well as a way to put the country in a murky situation where many could target and could work to pursue their own special goals.
Okay, well, let me get Mr. Freeman in on this. Well, some mainstream Western sources are pointing the finger at Syria. Let's look at the possibility. How likely do you think that Syria could be behind this situation, especially now that it has been engaged in this almost 18, 19-month-long war, of course, with foreign-backed armed groups there? How likely do you think that they would be involved in this at this point in time?
My organization, EAR Magazine, we're still investigating who actually, if in fact this attack was carried out by the Syrian government. And I have my suspicions that it probably wasn't, but I don't know for sure, because I see no benefit coming to the Syrians for this. Now, if we look at the situation with Turkey, the Syrian government has been accused of launching the attack in Turkey that led to now this two-week-old conflict between the two countries, and I seriously doubt that was the case. I think Turkey is being used, and who knows if not the various Al-Qaeda or related networks were the ones who didn't fire into Turkey. So that's also a possibility in the situation in Lebanon. Because as the previous speaker mentioned, I agree that there is a plan now for massive chaos in the region. I think you have to look towards the British royal family who created this whole mess with Syke Picot back in the early part of last century. And I think you have to look at the Saudi royal family and to some extent Qatar. That I think there's a deliberate policy to destroy the nation states throughout the entire region. I think we have a situation in the United States with President Obama and his crazy UN envoy, Susan Rice, who would like to see an overthrow of the government of Assad, despite the fact this violates the Geneva Convention, the UN. And the Russians and the Chinese are very much opposed because they see that this could lead to an attack on them. So we have the danger of immediate dismantling of nations in the region, forming chaos. And we also have the potential that this could lead to a wider war, including a war with Russia and China.
Okay, Mr. Freeman, I'm going to get back to you because I would like to hear your explanation about the destruction of those nation states. But let me get our next guest in on this discussion, Ms. Narwani. Now, others are speculating about the possibility of Hezbollah being behind this. Your take on that, especially that Hezbollah has just sent that drone deep inside of Israeli territory. How likely do you think that Hezbollah is behind this bombing?
I personally, and I'm going to try to be consistent on this throughout this program, but I personally don't understand why people are speculating so much. I mean, there are so many different characters and political parties with interests in this region, especially now, the hottest time the region has seen in a decade. Hezbollah, Syria, France, UK, US, Salafist militants. I refuse the speculation. We don't even have the first bit of evidence coming in from the authorities for us to even, you know, begin that game. And it's a sad thing that in Lebanon, nobody waits for evidence. Immediately, even the parties on this, you know, who support Wissam al-Hassan, for instance, are jumping in before his, you know, body's even cold, and using his death to push forth an agenda. So I'm afraid I just cannot speculate on anything. I know nothing.
Okay, well, what about that, Mr. Mousavi? Do you think that his death is already used and trying to, as our guest also in Beirut has said, that in Lebanon, unfortunately, situations are used sometimes to try to further various political agendas? How do you see the whole thing playing out itself right now so far in Lebanon?
Well, this is perfectly right. This is totally right. Here is the culture that is prevailing in the country. Everyone is haunted with investing and capitalizing over anything that happens. And we knew, for example, here in Lebanon, during and after every assassination, after every terrorist attack, after every crime that would target a certain figure, which is like pro 14th of March or 14th of March, we can take scores of examples in this regard. There is something that should happen in politics. There is something that should happen in judiciary. So as if a blood price should be paid in order to make something happen. And here we go into the same vicious cycle that started starting by 2005 and continuing on till now. The problem is that, just like what Sharmeen Narwani said, that everyone jumps before the dead body is called, and they go into accusations, they go into even saying the verdict and the judgment, and they finish everything before giving any chance for the judiciary, for the security, to go into complete investigation, to go and bring evidence. It's a kind of political accusations. It does not have any solid ground, and it's used only to capitalize and to maximize their own political profits rather than going and searching for the real criminal. And I believe by this we would lose a lot. Lebanon would lose a lot. And we would be given an opportunity for the real criminal to get away or to destroy the evidence that might bring us closer. Though if it's in politics, you can very simply say who is benefiting from this. I would say Israel is the first beneficiary from this. I don't believe that people who are in trouble would need to get any more trouble in Lebanon. And I believe, for example, when you talk about Hezbollah, when you talk about others, they don't want to have any kind of instability in the region. Stability is a top priority for Hezbollah and for others in the country.
Well, Mr. Freeman, and you talked about the nation states that you talked about Saudi Arabia, you talked about Qatar, and you talked about the UK. I want to expand on your premise of what they would have to benefit for doing that.
Over the last decade and more, you've seen the policy from people like Tony Blair, when he was still in government, calling for regime change and the responsibility to protect, to replace the doctrine of the nation state, which came out of the Treaty of Westphalia in 1648. What you have now is a collapse of the transatlantic financial empire. You're seeing it played out in Europe. It's also continuing in the US. And there are certain families and political financial circles who would not want to see strong nation states existing as this financial system begins to unravel. And the Saudi family, which was directly involved through Prince Bandar and others, with elements around the world in the 9/11 attack in the United States in 2001. And we see similar elements were involved in the 9/11 attack of 2012. And I know for a fact that there are factions in the U.S., including our president and ambassador, who are joining with factions in the U.K., who want to see nation states overthrown, regime change from Tony Blair. And they feel that this is the best way they can control and govern the area. So I feel that it's an urgent situation to find out who was responsible, but Lebanon is going to be used just as Syria is being used and other countries are being used as part of a larger geopolitical conflict that could expand to Russia and China. And I take that overall picture, that geopolitical reality, very seriously.
What about that, Ms. Narwani? Do you think that your country, do you think that Lebanon is being used in all of this? We have seen, of course, over decades now, every time it becomes somewhat stable, there seems to be either an assassination, a bombing, or something that seems to try not to allow this country to enjoy the security that I'm sure most Lebanese want. Do you think that this is part of a bigger conspiracy? I'm not just talking about this specific bombing, but in general, your country, do you feel that it is being used?
First of all, I'm not Lebanese.
Okay.
I just live here. People aren't doing this because they don't like Lebanon. I mean, Lebanon is just a very crucial place. Part of the reason why I moved here to make this my base while covering the Middle East is because you can find every political view in the region reflected here and represented here by the various parties and factions and sects. So it's a very sort of dynamic place with a mishmash of regional political views, and which is why it so often becomes the battleground. Also, being a much smaller state surrounded by stronger neighbors, it is a vulnerable state, and people can often play out their interests in this small country. I don't think the situation today now is much different than it was in 2005 or in 2006 or, you know, even before in the Civil War. It continues, you know, and obviously, you know, the way to get out of this is for international players, hegemons to pull out of the region once and for all and allow states to develop organically. Sadly, that doesn't happen. Syria is possibly the last battleground in the sort of the war of the blocks, as they say in the Middle East. And this is a very, very important battle. If it means dragging poor little Lebanon through the mud again, every which way, so be it. We can't obviously tell, and I'm not sure we'll ever get to the bottom of who conducted the assassination, because there are the obvious suspects, and then there are, you know, the false flag operations that we seem to be seeing more of in the region. It's a very difficult call. Is this to destabilize Lebanon, or is it to pose the threat of destabilization? Because there are some parties who just want controlled chaos and others who'd like complete chaos and others yet, you know, just to send a message. And Lebanon is the perfect place to send these messages, whether you're the United States, France, Great Britain, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Russia, Iran, or Al-Qaeda. So, you know, sadly, we're probably going to see a little bit more of this as the battle heats up in Syria. I'm saddened that March 14th politicians came out so quickly and pointed fingers. I was hoping that the Lebanese political parties had learned something, and in the last 4-6 years where there hadn't been assassinations, and we're going to tread more carefully to reduce tensions and to, you know, ward off destabilization. But it seems they don't learn.
So, Mr. Mousavi, your take on that. Now, our previous guest, Ms. Narwani, just talked about the Syrian aspect in all of this. Do you think that this bombing is related to what is happening in Syria? We know that Western-backed groups now have been involved in a bitter battle in the Syrian government and have not been as successful as they thought they would have been. And we also know that the UN envoy to Syria right now, Lakhdar Brahimi, is trying to get a truce in place by Eid al-Adha, which is in around October 26th or so. So do you think that any of this is connected, this bombing? Do you think it could be connected to that to make sure that tensions are running high still in the area?
Yes, it could be. I mean, when you want to talk about the possibilities, when you want to talk about the probability of the thing, it could be very probable, because we know very well there are people who are trying to pressure the situation and they try to make a kind of zone between Lebanon and Syria. Some are trying, they wanted to deploy armies, multinational forces, UNIFIL armies, United Nations armies in the area between Lebanon and Syria. This way it could be more possible for them to funnel more arms and more logistic helps to the military opposition in Syria. I mean, there is always possibilities. Whenever you have chaos, whenever you have turbulence, whenever you have a general unstable situation, a lot of loopholes would be there in order to serve goals and agendas of so many groups. At this very specific instant, I believe, yeah, this could help in this situation. And this could tell as well that, listen, unless you do help and make something urgent in order to tip the balance in Syria, because we know very well up till now there hasn't been an ability to topple the regime there. It has always been the promises ever since this violations and this violence erupted in Syria, and this systematic destruction of the state in Syria ever since has started. We heard a lot of promises that it is in 2 weeks Bashar is going to go, in 2 months Bashar is going to go. It's been now more than 18 months, it's now going to be 2 years, and Bashar is there. They were not able to do anything in order to topple his regime. So I think they are trying to make more pressures in other areas to try to provoke other forces to interfere and exercise more powerful intervention in the Syrian crisis. This is a possibility that we cannot put aside.
Okay, well, Mr. Freeman, we're almost out of time. How likely do you think that Tel Aviv could be behind trying to create chaos there?
I think if Tel Aviv is behind it, again, they're being used as a pawn. As you probably know, there's a huge fight going on inside Israel, including a recent speech by the former head of Mossad in Washington that opposes an attack on Iran, and that opposes further destabilizations in Syria, as does the United States military General Dempsey of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. So there are many people around the world who do not want to see the conflicts in this area of the world expand into a world war. However, we do have the regime change faction, which includes the current President of the United States, Barack Obama. What we need for the area is we should have a conference, should include Russia, should include Iran, Syria, Lebanon, the countries in the area, and discuss mutual economic benefits and stability and resuming the kind of relationships, including Turkey, that can advance the welfare and the economic conditions for the people in that region. And we should eliminate and ridicule the use of war and regime change to settle these problems. I mean, this is a violation of international law, what's going on in Syria with the West backing al-Qaeda, and we have to get the Saudis and others to stop their attempts to overthrow these governments as well.
Well, Ms. Narwani, last question. We're just about totally out of time now, but I want your perspective on what you think needs to be done now in order to avoid more bloodshed and turmoil in Lebanon and the region.
Look, my area is geopolitics. I can just quickly say that, like I said earlier, Syria is the last battleground. The regional hegemons of the past few decades are, you know, desperately grasping to hang on to what they're losing, clearly economically, politically, and otherwise in the region. And they're throwing everything, including the kitchen sink, at Syria. And a lot of people are dying. They're going all the way. And I really think, as much as I appreciate the sentiments of the last speaker towards positivity and positive change in the region, it's just not going to happen until one side loses. So I'm afraid we're in for a proper last battle in the region until one side emerges victorious, as sad as that is to say.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for being with us. Political analyst Mr. Abraham Mousavi from Beirut, from the Executive Intelligence Review, Mr. Lawrence Freeman in Baltimore, and senior associate, Oxford University, Ms. Jarman Larwani, joined us via Skype in Beirut. Thank you all for being with us. And thank you, viewers. Join us right here, same time, same place tomorrow for another look at tomorrow's top headline stories. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing out for myself and all the crew here in Tehran. Goodbye.